Eine große Grube mit glühend heißen Steinen. Männer schippen feuchte Fasern auf die heißen Steine. Es dampft und schmaucht. Um die Grube herum sind 10 Tonnen Früchte gestapelt. Sie sehen aus wie überdimensionierte Ananas. Es sind Agavenherzen. Die Männer werfen sie auf die dampfenden Agavenfasern in den Erdofen. Es ist immer ein ganz besonderer Moment und eine große Investition, wenn die Produktion einer neuen Charge Mezcal startet. Mezcal ist ein Agavenbrand, vorwiegend aus Mexiko. Die Mezcaleros destillieren eine Maische aus Agavenherzen. Die Herzen werden vorher tagelang im Erdofen gedämpft. Daher kommt die rauchige Note des Mezcal. Das Wort Mezcal stammt von der Sprache der Azteken und bedeutet gekochte Agave. Aber erst die Spanier brachten das von den Mauren erlernte Wissen um die Destillation nach Amerika. Die Produktion von Mezcal ist eine traditionelle Handwerkskunst, ohne Hightech und chemische Hilfsstoffe. Víctor Pérez von der Brennerei Los Danzantes aus Santiago Matatlán im Bundesstaat Oaxaca beschreibt den Produktionsprozess von der Ernte der Agavenherzen bis zum fertigen Mezcal.
After you have your agave mature enough, first you are going to take out the inflorescence. So all the sugar goes down and you can have all the concentration of sugar in the piña, heart or corazón that we call of the agave. After that, you are going to shave the agave. You are going to take out the leaves because those don't have sugar content. Basically, they are full of other kind of ingredients like saponins and other not desirable flavors that we don't want in our product. So that's why we shave it, okay? Then we are going to take it into a truck that we normally call volteos. And we are going to fill it up and bring them here. Every single piña, as you can see, they are quite big. They are going to be around 100 to 200 of kilos, okay? They are really, really heavy and really intense to work with and to manipulate. So that's why some of the producers cut it in pieces so they can bring it here. Well, you bring it here, you cut it in pieces, and this is an oven. This is the first stage of the production process of mezcal in the distillery. What we are going to do here is basically to transform the sugars into sugars that are available to produce alcohol and we can actually drink it. This is un horno cónico de tierra, pero que se enciende con madera, that you fire up with wood. This is a 10 tons capacity oven that is fired up with oak, mezquite, or any local wood that you can find around. What we are going to do is to fire up with the wood at around 7 in the morning. We are going to put the stones over it. It's going to be around 7 hours there, let's say like at 2 in the afternoon today, we are going to start fill it up. We're just waiting for the rocks are hot enough for the proper cooking of the agave. These rocks have to be special rocks. They have to be or volcanic ones or river ones. They have to be strong enough to support the heat. If not, they just would be exploding all the time, okay, and breaking. So you have 1 ton of wood, 1 ton of stones, or river or volcano stones. And then when you have enough heat, that is going to be around 1,000 grados centígrados, you are going to start like putting in some specific way the agave. When you are ready with all the agave over there, you cover it up and you seal it up with soil. Then we cover it with sacks, with empty sacks like that one. So you don't have any loss of pressure, neither vapor. So because basically it's not the fire that the one that is going to cook the agave, but the steam and vapor and smoke. All the flavors of smoke from mezcal from Oaxaca come from this specific method. You seal it up and then you are going to leave it there for around 3 to 4 days until it's cooked properly. We are going to cover the rocks in just a couple of minutes with fibers, with wet fibers of agave, so we don't have a direct contact between the hot rocks and the agave, so we don't have an overcooked process. Plus, we are going to always put the agaves in some specific way that the white face of agave, the main center of it, face down. We always wait it before and after the cooking process. Why? Because we are going to have losses. Of course, we have humidity that gets lost with the heat. Plus, we have a lot of juices that fall down into the rocks. So we need to know how much we're losing. We're losing around 10% of the weight. So 10 tons, let's get 9 tons out of it. Then after that, this should be full of cooked agave. And after that, we are going to smash the agave. Here we have an Egyptian meal. It's also well known as Egyptian meal, stone meal. This is a technology that comes from Egypt. They used to use it for bread production. Basically, it's a huge stone. It weighs around 1 ton, and it's being pulled by a horse, a cow, a donkey, sometimes a machine, etc. In the case of Los Danzantes, we work with a horse. It's called Sansón. He's going to be smashing around 4 hours a day, around 1,000 kilos of agave. Then after that, we are going to move it to the fermentation area. Most of the magic happens here. It's when all the yeasts transform the sugar content of the agave into alcohol. We don't use extra yeast. We just have the yeast that comes with the agave, that are part of the wood, are in the air. Every single place have their own yeasts, and their own yeasts give specific flavors to the mezcal. Flavors that you can find in mezcal is flavors that come from the plant, and the soil. It's basically minerality from the soil. All the herbal, floral come from the plant. Then you have the smoky, mineral, woody, caramel from the oven. And then in this part, you can find fruity, you can find lactic, you can find meaty. And then in the distillation, you are going to find all the alcoholic part and the cetonas and acidities, etc., in the mezcal. So all that combination of flavors, you can find in the final product. So that's why it's so complex as well. Even it's in the same palenque. Every single batch is going to change from one to another one, okay? Because we cannot standardize 100% the product, especially because this part, this is open fermentation, completely natural. We don't add any kind of yeast, neither any kind of chemicals. Basically, we just put the agave, put some water. After the fermentation, what we are going to find is the distillation process. The distillation process, this distillation is a traditional alembic made out of copper. 250 liters capacity. You have a copper pot in this chamber. You are going to fire it up. But you're going to put all the product that is going to be fibers, water, juices here. We don't filter it. We put all together. That's something really different from other spirits or even tequila. Tequila don't use the fibers. They just take the liquid. So we put them all. We are going to close it with the head of the alambic, which is called Montera. Then we are going to have the swan neck, that is the connection between the pot and the condensation area. In the condensation area, what we are going to have is a serpentine that is inside of cold water. The point here is like you heat it up, all the stem is going to come up. Of course, the first that are going to come up are the more volatile ones. So first alcohol, then water, and then, the solids are not going to cross. So the first stage of distillation in mezcal is basically to separate solids from liquids. For every 250 liters, you are going to get 40 liters of something called ordinario or ordinary, that is going to be around 25 to 30 ABV. So it's really low in alcohol. It's drinkable, but it's pointless. We're not looking for that. We want something serious. After that, we're going to collect enough product from all the alambics until we get 250 liters, and then we're going to go through the second distillation. Second distillation, basically, you just have liquids. What you are going to look here is look for high proof alcohol. What we're going to do is to separate the bad alcohol from the good alcohol or the good quality alcohol. You are going to make the cuts. The cuts basically are heads, body or heart, and tails. The first part is the heads or points. Here in Mexico, we call it puntas or cabezas. It's methanol. It's something that we are not looking for. It's the first part that comes because it's the most volatile one. So you start with, let's say, 70 grados centígrados, Celsius, and this is the first part that is going to start dropping. You are going to have around 10 liters of that. We are going to basically separate them. We are not going to use it for mezcal because, it's illegal. One. Second is poisonous. After that, we are going to start going up in the temperature, and we are going to start getting the proper alcohol, ethanol, our favorite alcohol, actually. We get the body. We are going to get around 90 to 100 liters of mezcal. It's already mezcal, but it's going to be high in alcohol. It's going to be around 65, 70 ABV. Okay, you can drink it. It's ethanol. But, it's really strong. Actually, it's illegal to sell it as mezcal, but you can sell it. You can sell it as aguardiente de agave. What we're going to do with this body, it's going to lower it down. We can lower it down with the first distillation. We can lower it down with tails, or we can lower it down with still water. It depends on the producer, it depends on the style, and it depends on the quality of your first distillation of tails. If they are bad quality, you don't use them. And so you just go for the water option. In the case of Los Danzantes, we are working with two different styles. Or we work with water, or we work with the first distillation. Okay, it depends. It's all about the master distiller, that in this case is Karina. Then after that, you are going to continue going up in the temperature, and then you are going to start getting like the sediments and like heavy metals, etc., of the alcohol, and that's the tails. The tails have all the funkiness, all the like super strong flavors, so you use that sometimes as well. But of course, you have to be a master distiller to play with that and have a proper product. So we separate heads, tails, we keep the body, we lower it down, and then you can have the final product.
Entscheidenden Einfluss auf den finalen Mezcal hat die Brennmeisterin von Los Danzantes, Karina Abad. Sie gibt Einblicke in ihre Arbeit und vergleicht das Brennen mit dem Kochen.
Como en la cocina, la mano de cada uno también incide en cómo hacerlo.
Wie in der Küche wirkt sich jeder Handgriff aus. Es geht darum, den Prozess der Destillation zu verstehen. Wohin willst du? Wo fängst du an? Was möchtest du mit deinem Produkt erreichen? Dieser Teil der Arbeit ist sehr wichtig.
Y pues acá trabajamos mucho con los chicos en tener una formación.
Wir arbeiten mit den Leuten und geben ihnen eine Ausbildung. Erklären ihnen auch, warum wir etwas auf eine bestimmte Art machen, was passiert, wenn wir etwas verändern. Mir gefällt es sehr, zu experimentieren und dadurch das Produkt zu verbessern. Wenn wir das erreichen, dann wiederholen wir das und etablieren es. Wir achten sehr auf die Qualität in jedem einzelnen Produktionsprozess. Wir dokumentieren alles, was wir machen, um daraus zu lernen und uns zu verbessern. Wir erfassen den gesamten Prozess. Die Menge des Wassers, die Menge des Feuerholzes und wo es herkam, wo die Agaven herkamen. In diesem handwerklichen Prozess gibt es viele Variationsmöglichkeiten. Er lässt sich niemals exakt bei der nächsten Charge wiederholen. Auch die Jahreszeit hat große Auswirkungen auf den Mezcal. Wenn es warm ist, schmeckt er anders, als wenn es kalt ist. Auch die Hefe und der Raum spielen eine Rolle. Wenn es sauber ist, kann man die Verbesserungen leichter messen und das hilft uns sehr.
Algo que está limpio y se puede medir para tener ciertas mejoras, también eso nos ayuda mucho.
Die Erfahrung der Brennmeisterin kommt nicht von ungefähr. Der tägliche Umgang mit Mezcal bedeutet vor allem eines.
Son muchos años de probar. Muchas pruebas.
Viele Jahre des Probierens, aber manchmal muss man auch langsam machen. Ich kenne viele Produzenten, die überhaupt nicht probieren. Über die muss ich besonders staunen, denn sie haben nur diese Arbeitstechnik gelernt, die sie anwenden und nicht probieren.
Cuando empecé a trabajar con productores, ellos no entendían los temas del sabor. ¿Usted qué ve en su mezcal, no? Pues está bueno porque está bien fuerte y está potente.
Als ich angefangen habe, haben sich viele Produzenten nicht um den Geschmack gekümmert. Sie fanden ihn gut, wenn er stark war. Es ging ihnen nicht ums Aroma. Es gibt schokoladige, erdige oder salzige Töne. Diese Begriffe gab es nicht in ihrem Vokabular. Das war Thema einer Weiterbildung, dass sie selbst ihre Produkte zu beschreiben lernen. Wenn du einen gefragt hast, welches ist dein bester, da habe ich einen guten. Und das war oft einer mit mehr als 50% Alkoholgehalt. Aber sie konnten nicht wirklich beschreiben, warum er gut schmeckt.
Der ungewohnt rauchige Geschmack von Mezcal ist für viele am Anfang irritierend. Es hilft ungemein, wenn man vor dem ersten Mezcal ein paar Dinge beachtet.
The best way is to close your eyes when you smell Mezcal. Because at the end it's a high proof alcohol, so it's difficult to find stuff on it if you are not used to it. Try to remember, because it's all about like what it's in your background, in your lifetime, you know, when where you are going to find all the flavors, aromas, etc., etc. That's going to help you a lot, because then you are not going to get confused in what you are looking. Something that happens, for example, when you are drinking pechuga, because you see it's red, you think it tastes like strawberry. It's like, and it doesn't have to do anything with strawberry, you know? But anyway, like, it happens because you get confused, you get distracted. So that's why it's also important to close your eyes and think what you are smelling and what you have in front of you. And then your memory. It's basically, the other day I was like drinking a mezcal that was still with something secret. And I just closed my eyes and I said, it's tortilla. And it wasn't tortilla, it was corn. It's like that kind of things that happens to you. Like, it doesn't smell like, it smells like my grandparents. And your grandparents used to have like perfumes out of, I don't know, roses. Nah, well, then it smells like roses, not like your grandparents. Okay. But that's the idea, like to come back to your memories in the aroma. So you smell it, you drink it, you sip it first in a really easy way. Don't drink so much. Just wash a little bit your mouth. Because it's a high-proof ABV, you need to produce a little bit of saliva. So you get used to the alcohol, and then you go for the proper sip of the mezcal. And then you start finding stuff. That's the idea of, like, when you are going to try for first time mezcal, try it that way, and it's easier.
Mezcal trinkt man am besten nicht aus einem Schnapsglas. In Mexiko benutzen die Menschen das Vaso Veladora, ein Glas für Gebetskerzen mit einem Kruzifix im Glasboden. Daraus entwickelte sich eine besondere Trinkkultur.
It's part of the culture of mezcal. Yeah. There's a whole history in the background of this glass. As you can see, it's not a glass for drinking mezcal. Yeah. It's not a glass for drinking, actually. It's a glass for candles. This was just produced 2 times a year during Day of Dead and Christmas for people to take it to the cemeteries or to the church. When they produce it, they produce the glass and they put the whole candle. Not melted here. So basically you put the candle and you can take it out really easily, just like doing like this. When you go to the graveyard, to the cemeteries, to win the during the Day of Dead, you take your food, you take your mezcal, you take your tequila or any kind of alcohol that actually the dead people used to drink it with them again, because it's supposed that that day people come back from the dead world and share with us again. Basically, what people were doing at the cemetery was like, okay, let's drink. Who bring the glasses? No one, man. Like, no one bring the glasses. Everybody bring mezcal, but not the glasses. So basically, just they take out the candle and start pouring it into it. And now after that, like, the company that used to do these glasses for those days, now they are producing it every day of the year. Now brands are putting their logos instead of the cross and stuff like that. But actually, like, the cool part of this is the cross or the spiritual part of mezcal, you know? Like, actually, the saying of saying, like, until you don't see the cross, hasta no ver la cruz, is basically hasta until you drink all your mezcal out of the glass. This is real, you know? Like, this is the real stuff.
Los Danzantes betreibt die eigene Brennerei in Santiago Matatlán und kooperiert mit diversen Brennmeistern aus verschiedenen Orten in der Region um Oaxaca. Daraus entstand 1999 die Marke Alipus.
Alipus, the meaning of Alipus, it's a slang from the 30s, 40s. In Mexico, they used to use it for, let's have an Alipus. It basically means let's have a drink. Like when you say let's have a schnapps, and it means any kind of alcohol. But most of the people that used that kind of word was like low-income people, you know? So basically it was more in cantinas, in bars, in low-quality restaurants, etc. But, well, of course, mezcal come from there as well, you know? People from the fields, people from the bars, like drunky people, etc. Now mezcal, it have another level, you know? That's why we wanted to bring it back and use it as it was used at that time. So it's a combination of art, culture, etc. The project of Alipus starts in the 99. The idea of Alipus is to show the difference from one mezcal from one town to another one. That's why San Juan del Río and San Luis del Río, even both of them are artisanal mezcal, 100% agave espadín. They taste completely different. That's the whole idea of the project. It's based on the terroir concept or terruño. It's a wine concept that it means a grape, it's going to change depending on the soil, depending on the altitude, depending on the water, the sun, the climate, and of course the surroundings and the approach of the human to the plant. Okay, so basically it's the same. I said, like, in the case of mezcal, it's even stronger because you have a plant that have been in the soil for 7, 10, some cases 20 years. So you have the terroir concept there, but a lot more than an apple, for example. Actually, we have a meeting called Encuentro Alipus every single year. We bring all the 11 different families together to a town, the university, the distillery here to talk about a specific topic. 2 years ago, we went to the University of Chapingo so they can get involved really into the project to learn about the herbicides or the pesticides like they shouldn't use, or which one they should use because they are organic or not, and what are the benefits of using one or the other one. It's really important for us. For example, 3 years ago, they talk about fermentation. 5 years ago, they talk about a smashing process, like what's the difference of using a grinder machine or an Egyptian meal or doing it by hand, like because at the end, the flavor is not so different, but the way that you open the fibers, it changes. So you are going to have a faster or a slower or a better fermentation based on that. So if you give them that information, they are free to use it. You know, they can say like, ah, no, these guys are crazy, or, well, I would like to try new stuff and understand, because basically they are doing something because they learn how to do it, but they never understand the chemical and physical part of it. I think the producers of Alipus already trust us. I mean, it's a project that have been already 20 years in the market. We start with 3 families, and now at the moment we're working with 11 different ones. And we don't just put families into the project just like that. It's by recommendation of the other producers. There's just one producer that quit the project. The other ones keep working and keep going.
Die Zusammenarbeit von Los Danzantes und den Produzenten von Alipus basiert auf gegenseitiger Hilfestellung und Vertrauen.
The trust is the most important part. We don't have a contract with these producers. They can do whatever they want with their product. It's their mezcal. In the moment that they want to quit the project, they can do it. They don't have a contract with us, basically. They can produce 2 other brands, and they can produce their own brand. What we do as Los Danzantes is to give them all the training, all the support to know how to deal with taxation, to deal with certification of origin, all the production methods. Just by changing the way you put your tools in some specific place instead of having it all around, it's going to change the process of production. And that the small details are the details that Los Danzantes is doing with these producers. The only thing that we do is that, like, to help them to have a better process of production, to certify their product, because sometimes you have longer-term fermentations, you don't do your cuts properly during the distillation, and that if you go to the lab, you don't go through the certification. So you cannot sell it in Mexico as mezcal, neither export it to other countries as mezcal. So what we do is that. It's like to say, like, okay, instead of fermented 7 days, go to 5. Or instead of using too much agave, use half water and agave in the fermentation, and so on and so on. All that small things, it's what we do as Los Danzantes Distillery with the producers of Alipus, but at the end they are the ones that like still like deciding what kind of flavors, what kind of agaves, what kind of aromas, etc. are going to have in their final product. So we just ask them to avoid chemicals during the fermentation and also for the agaves.
Alipus-Brennmeister Rodolfo López Sosa aus San Juan del Río bestätigt die positiven Entwicklungen der letzten Jahre und nennt mehrere Vorteile durch die Zusammenarbeit mit Los Danzantes.
Es freut uns, dass es hier vor Ort Arbeit und Beschäftigung gibt. So müssen wir nicht in andere Länder migrieren. Der Vorteil ist, dass wir einen sicheren Absatzmarkt haben. Unsere komplette Produktion findet Abnehmer. Es entwickelt sich sehr gut. Früher hatten wir zwar viel Mezcal, aber wir wussten nicht, wo wir ihn verkaufen sollten. Es gab keinen Markt dafür. Jetzt werden wir fast unsere komplette Produktion los. Uns bleibt selbst kaum eine Notreserve.
Für eine sichere Mezcal-Reserve und eine größere Produktionskapazität hat die Familie López ihre Brennerei von Grund auf modernisiert.
Sie mussten die Brennerei modernisieren und einiges verbessern. Sie haben alles neu aufgebaut, erst niedergerissen und von null wieder aufgebaut. Sie haben jetzt mehr Destillierkolben, mehr Zuber für die Fermentierung und den Produktionsprozess für eine effizientere und ertragreichere Produktion modernisiert, um die Nachfrage nach Mezcal zu decken.
Die große Nachfrage nach Mezcal kann allerdings perspektivisch auch zum Problem werden.
Das Problem ist, viele Agaven zu beschaffen. Wir haben zwar unsere eigenen, aber es gibt immer mehr Produzenten, die um die Agaven kämpfen.
Die begehrte Agave ist die Grundlage für jeden Mezcal. Aus diesem speziellen Spargelgewächs lässt sich auch noch mehr herstellen. Victor Perez von der Brennerei Los Danzantes weiß jede Menge über diese Pflanze.
Agave, or also known as maguey or metal. The metal or agave, it's a plant that it's endemic from America. You can find it from the south of United States to the north of South America. Let's say Texas, Nuevo México, Arizona, all the way down, going through Mexico, Central America to Venezuela, Colombia, Ecuador, Peru. Okay, you actually can find even agave spirits from other countries like Venezuela or Ecuador. Okay, so this is really interesting because most of the people think that tequila is just Mexican, mezcal is just Mexican, but it's not true. Like all the spirits that come from this plant can come from all the places where you have the raw material. It's as easy as wine, you know. But the thing that happens is that in Mexico, we have the biggest diversity of agave, and also it's the center of origin, it's the center of domestication of the plant. So that's why we have such a strong connection with the plant as Mexicans, as a culture. Also, this connection that I was talking about, you can find it in other parts like the food, for example. You can eat the agave, you can eat the stem, the inflorescence of the agave, you can eat the flowers, you can use the plant for clothes, like textiles, you can use the stem as well for construction, etc., etc. So basically the agave for Mexican was a super important plant because it gives you food, it gives you house, it gives you clothes, and most importantly, it gives you alcohol, okay? So that's why our connection with the plant is so, so strong. Nowadays, it's known that you can find around 250 different species of agave. This is going to change all the time because, of course, botanists are always finding new agaves, or they make the marks of the genetical chart and they say like, no, this one is the same as this one. It just changed morphologically. Nowadays, you can say that there is going to be around 250. From that 250, you are going to find 70% in Mexico. And from that 70%, 70% it's endemic from Mexico. That's what I mean, like the biggest diversity it's in this country. Plus, the biggest diversity in the country, it's here in Oaxaca. That's why Oaxaca have the fame, or la fama, one of the best places to drink mezcal, because you have all these options, okay? And why Oaxaca have this diversity? Well, you have to think about the geography of Oaxaca and the geography of Mexico. Mexico have two big chains of mountains, that you have La Sierra Madre Occidental y La Sierra Madre Oriental, basically in the both sides of the country. These two chains of mountains are going to clash in Oaxaca. So that's why Oaxaca is so diverse in geographically talking. And that's why you have so much diversity in cultures, so much diversity in plants, animals, and of course in agaves.
Die Reproduktion von Agaven läuft vegetativ und generativ, geschlechtlich und ungeschlechtlich. Die Mezcalproduktion verhindert leider eine Form der Reproduktion.
How you produce mezcal? Basically, when you have a proper agave that it's mature enough, you are going to cut the stem when it's coming up. If you cut the stem, you are not going to be available to reproduce in an asexual way the agave. So why you do this? Because you need all the sugar that is concentrate for the reproduction process of the agave goes down again to the agave, and you can transform it into alcohol. That's why you have to stop this reproduction. And this is really bad because then you don't have this diversity that you are looking for. For that reason, Los Danzantes, Alipuz, Chapingo, that it's a university, the Center of Research of Yucatan, are looking for options to continue with the production of mezcal, but without putting in risk the biodiversity of the agave. So we get together with these two institutions, plus also with the CONACYT, that is one of the most important institutions in Mexico for research. And we start this project. All these plants that we are seeing here, we are reproducing it in different ways, in asexual, sexual, even in some cases that the plant it was in risk, we decide to do it in vitro, and we start reproducing it. And for what we are just going to reproduce it? For reforestation, recovery, reforestation, and of course mezcal production. We are just going to start doing this with agaves that we use normally for mezcal. Something really important to mention is Los Danzantes and Alipus, and they start, they decide like they don't want to get involved with wild agaves because of obvious reasons, sustainable reasons. At the moment, we are reproducing and recovering 20 different species of agave. We are going to continue with 20 more next in the next stage of the project. But first, we are like checking like if this works or not. What we're trying to do here is not just stay with one reproduction system, neither with just one species of agave. And the most important part, when this goes to the fields, to the real fields, we are not just going to have agaves. We are going to have different cultivars, like corn, pumpkin, beans, agaves. What we are trying to do here is to avoid these monocultures. Basically, this is something new. We don't have product yet from these kind of agaves. We started this project 7 years ago. So maybe 2-3 years after this, we are going to start being available to produce mezcal out of it. What we are trying to check nowadays is like what kind of soil works for them, the amount of water, the sugar content, if it's doing it pretty good or not. We have like fungus or any kind of disease. We try to control it with natural processes like pheromones to attract them. And then you have a little bit of potion there instead of putting like herbicides and insecticides all over the plant. What we do here is just put some money and get the money back when we produce mezcal. That's the idea. And of course, to protect the plants as much as we can.
Dieser botanische Agavengarten zeigt die verschiedenen Ausprägungen der Pflanze. Größe, Farbe, Blätter können komplett anders aussehen. Die Agaven wachsen vor einer ehemaligen Kaffeefabrik. In der Halle haben Los Danzantes ihre Etikettier- und Abfüllanlage untergebracht.
Here is the only place that we bottle and label Alipus and Los Danzantes. All of our products are bottled and labeled here, not in the Palenques, not in Los Danzantes Distillery. All are over here. From here it goes to Veracruz, the harbor of Veracruz, and it goes to, let's say, Hamburg, or it goes to Barcelona or whatever. And or it goes the other side to go to Peru, Colombia, Singapore, etc., etc., etc. Okay? At the moment, we are distributing to 16 different countries in 4 different continents. But 2 of these countries, let's say Germany, for example, and Singapore, they distribute to other countries. It's really, really nice to hear that because this starts in Mexico in 97. The first exportation was to the United States in 2006, then to Europe in Germany in 2009, and then after that, it just spread different parts of the world. Well, and now that the project have 22 years, we are pretty happy with the results. We still being a family business, not yet a multinational corporation or anything like that.
Der Familienbetrieb von Los Danzantes setzt auf Handarbeit und beschäftigt bevorzugt alleinerziehende Mütter aus den naheliegenden Dörfern. Victor Perez beschreibt die einzelnen Arbeitsabläufe beim Etikettieren und Abfüllen.
Basically, we bring new bottles to this vat. Or also recycled bottles, because we have restaurants and bars, so we bring the bottles from there and we recycle it. We clean it, we take the stamps and all the labels, and then we dry it and we fill it up. This is a semi-automatic machine. Basically, it helps a lot the gravity to use it. And then we have this table that it's a table for quality control. Basically, we filter 3 times before this, but after that, sometimes you have sediments and you have to check that everything is under control. Then after that, we are going to start with the labeling process. We have that table for labeling. All of this process is made by hand. And as you can see, well, most of the people is women. We just contract people from the town, Union Zapata or Santiago Matatlán. Why? Because the idea here is not to make them move so far every single day, so they can even go to eat with their kids, because their kids have the school around here. That's why we haven't buy any labeling machine, because a labeling machine could do this like immediately, but we would have to take the job of 10, 15 people.
Die Etiketten der Alipus-Serie bieten neben den Infos rund um den Mezcal wie Alkoholgehalt, Agavenart oder Flaschennummer auch einen künstlerischen Aspekt. Das je nach Ort in einer anderen Farbe gestaltete Motiv war ursprünglich ein Original-Holzschnitt.
The design of the label, at the beginning, when it started the project, it was made by hand. because it's a stamp. It actually comes from the hilography technique, that is basically carving wood, then put some ink, and then stamp. But of course, we cannot do it that anymore. It's made by an artist. It's called Joel Rendon. He's an artist from Puebla. He designed all the labels of Alipuz and also the stamps from every single town. For example, this is San Luis del Rio. There is San Juan del Rio, San Baltasar, etc., etc. All of them are different. He's keep working with us for all the special editions, like the Olla de Barro, the 20th anniversary one as well is made out with his art, and also the special editions of every single year.
Alipuz hat das Holzschnittetikett und auch das Logo von Los Danzantes greift regionale Traditionen auf.
Something really important is our logo. We have one of the three main animals of Mesoamerican cultures. We have the black panther, we have the eagle, and we have the jaguar. We are called Los Danzantes because Los Danzantes, it's something similar to mezcal. Mezcal at the end, it's a combination of two worlds. It's like the distillation that comes from another continent, another knowledge. And the agave, that it's an endemic plant from America. And the dancers nowadays, they used to dance, this is a pre-Hispanic dance, that they used to dance for the gods of pre-Hispanic gods, like let's say the moon, the sun, the wind, the nature, the soil, etc. But nowadays they don't dance to that kind of gods anymore, they dance to a specific god, that it's the Christianic one, because of the Spaniards' connection. It's quite similar to mezcal as a cultural product.
Die Mezcal-Kultur war lange Zeit wenig sichtbar und hatte einen eher zweifelhaften Ruf. Auch die Brennerei Los Danzantes hat erst mit etwas anderem angefangen und sich später um die Mezcal-Kultur bemüht.
Los Danzantes didn't start as a distillery. It starts as a restaurant in Mexico City, in the south area, in a south neighborhood of Mexico City called Coyoacán. It was in the 95. The whole point of this restaurant was to revalue the Mexican food in a different way. And they start with the most famous Mexican spirit, tequila. So at the beginning was Los Danzantes tequila, but when they were traveling around Oaxaca, they were traveling a bit in the mountains of Oaxaca, well, they find out that the gastronomy here is amazing, full of ingredients, but most importantly, they found mezcal as part of the gastronomy of Oaxaca. So they decide to start a project of mezcal as the drink of the house of the restaurant in Mexico City in the 97. And they start Los Danzantes Distillery. Something really funny about that time is like no one wanted to drink mezcal. Actually, people think mezcal was really bad. It was for people that lives in the fields, people that's like junkies, drunkies, blah, blah, blah. That it was a shitty alcohol, sometimes bad quality that can be poisonous, like if you don't distill proper alcohol, etc. So no one wanted to drink it. So we were trying to stimulate it, even giving it for free in the restaurant, etc. But people just said like, ah, yeah, it's really funny, your new mezcal, but bring me my whiskey or my rum or my tequila. Something that we noticed is like most of the drinks at that time that were considered good quality, it was the aged ones. Whiskey, rum, cognac, bourbon, even tequila, etc. Aged, all of them. So what we do is like, okay, let's do it as well. So we start aging our mezcal and it starts working. People start saying like, oh, it tastes good. It tastes actually like a whiskey, but it has something different. What is it? It's like, well, it's not whiskey, it's mezcal. You should try it without age. And people start to change. At that time, the category was around, let's say, 85%, 90% was aged mezcal. And the other 10% was joven mezcal. That's how the category was in the whole world, like internationally talking. Nowadays, less than 1% is aged mezcal, okay? Like, let's say 22 years after that. Why? How this happened? Brands like Real Minero, like Los Danzantes, like Mezcaloteca, all these projects, what they are trying to do is to explain mezcal to the people. All of them, basically what they wanted to do is educate the people. Talk about mezcal, you know, what is it, how it's produced, what's the traditional way of doing it, what's the culture in the background, etc., etc. And of course, the aging process wasn't part of the culture. So the categories start changing, basically, from the non-cultural way of drinking mezcal to the cultural way. Actually, I don't know if you remember, mezcal used to have a worm. Nowadays, the bottles of mezcal doesn't have a worm anymore. It's not common to find them. Why? Because the warm thing wasn't a cultural thing from the fields, from the mountains of Oaxaca. It was more a marketing strategy from a brand in the 70s to be available to sell mezcal, differentiating it from tequila. And it works, actually. At some point, it was all over the world. People that talks about mezcal wanted to drink the warm. And nowadays, we know it's not the best way of drinking mezcal. But anyway, it works at some point. But now with this re-education of the people and the category, people start drinking proper mezcal.